From the studios of WICR at the University of Indianapolis, I'm Richard Brendan, and this is Journey's Fire. Welcome to the program. There's a great new book out from one of my favorite authors, Kate McGahan. The book is called The Walls Between Us. It's a borderline love story. Kate McGahan has been a hospice grief counselor and clinical social worker for 35 years. The first Jack McGaffigan book was released in 2015, and there were more books and genres forthcoming. Kate brings stories to her readers in an entertaining and thought-provoking way, and when you learn something new, you grow, and when you grow, you heal. It's by design. She writes each and every book to heal something in the reader. Intensely spiritual, Kate sprinkles subtle seeds of faith to strengthen the reader's personal spiritual path. And while you think she's just entertaining you, she's also planting seeds and teaching you new ways of looking at yourself and those you love. Kate's books will change the way you think, and you'll never look at life or death or love the same way again. Having her on before and having read several of her books, I can vouch for all of that. And this is a new kind of book for Kate. So I'm excited that she's joining us from the beautiful southwest of Arizona. Kate McGahan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Richard.
The last time you were on, we talked about the book before this one. And you have such a huge following, by the way. Do you call them groupies, grief groupies? Is there such a term for that?
Oh, I didn't know there was, but now that you say that, I think it's true.
Well, you single-handedly got my interview with you out to so many people, so thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
Welcome. I just shared it once, and it's all their fault.
So many people have followed you over the years with the books that you write. I mean, you literally get a download with each one of these books because I find them so well-written. They're packed with both, it's like a good funeral. They're packed with both humor and tears, and especially the ones, your beloved heart dog, Jack McGaffigan, who was like ghostwriter for that and from his perspective. This book is really different from the other books that you chose. And it features two star-crossed, well, they end up soulmates. Sarah and Benito. First of all, where did the idea for this book come from?
Well, I was a Sarah, and I met a Benito about 20 years ago, and I started researching and writing the book 20 years ago, and it just kind of took hold and reminded me it was there and it wanted to be written now.
Yeah. And what was going on with immigration here in this country, in Mexico, did that have anything to do with the timing of this book as well?
It did. I think the whole issue was, the border wall is still an issue, but it was a prime issue last year. And I think that's what, it got a lot of people thinking about the border wall that never thought about it before. And it got me rethinking the border wall. So it seemed a good time to do this. Yeah.
And what's interesting, I think you told me that you self-publish these books. I find that impressive because they all look so amazing, and yet you've learned on your own how to do that. But you say on this book, The Walls Between Us, there was two different covers?
There were. I was I'm involved in some author guidance groups, mm-hmm. and I wanted a coyote on the front cover because the coyote is a significant messenger, per se, in the book. And he's around every corner when there's a change in the air. And I had a lot of people tell me I should have a couple on the book if it's going to be a romance. So I put a couple on the book, and I tried both covers. And can you guess which cover has won?
The couple?
No, the coyote has won.
The coyote. Now, see, I would think that maybe more women might choose the couple because of romance.
Well, the interesting thing is, in my other books, probably 70% of the readers are women. Mm-hmm. And in this particular book, probably 60% of the readers are men, and I think it's because there's a coyote on the cover. Yeah, I think I haven't quite put it all together yet, but
Interesting.
It's a book not for just for women, and it's not just romance. It's an extremely spiritual book, and it talks a lot about the wildlife and the outdoors here in Arizona and the issues here in Arizona, and I think men are attracted to those things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I said, in all your other books, you're dealing with loss of various kinds and in such a very inspirational way. I remember reading one of your books that I hope to give voice to here soon. But I would have tears in my eyes just reading the words that, let's say, Jack gave you. And I found that to be true in this book, too. Of course, you're the writer of this. But first of all, kudos for branching out and writing something a little bit different. But I also think this gives people a beautiful snapshot, a different way of looking at immigration. Because unfortunately, it got so ugly and so political. And I think we forget about the lives of the people that are involved in that story. And unfortunately, I've had a lot of people say, well, people who are immigrants, you know, they're all crooks and they're coming over here. And yet I'll hear from other people and say, no, they're not at all. These people are giving up everything for a taste of freedom. Mm-hmm. And somehow you're able to cover all of that in this book. I mean, politics, the beauty, soulmate relationships, there's a whole nother teaching there too, which I'd love to get into. But first of all, Sarah, and by the way, the other question I had is, I read where this was based on a true story, so now I know. It's your story.
Yeah, well, part of it's my story, and then there's other synchronistic relationships that come into play.
Absolutely.
Those, a lot of them are based on true people that I know, but they're fiction, so that's why the book is fiction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's about love, it's about loss, it's about forgiveness, it's about betrayal. To me, it tugs on you emotionally, but also intellectually. It offers a great balance of this story, but also the way you describe the desert. And again, there's no photos in this book, but your words, you're a wordsmith. And so I found that very beautiful as well. There is a beauty to that area that I think a lot of people, unless they've traveled there, have no clue about. And I know you've shared that with me before, just the beauty of the desert in its own unique way.
I wanted to capture that so people who may never come here would know that. It's kind of like trying to show them that Mexicans are not bad people.
Yeah.
And that Border Patrol agents can be good people. And, you know, all the things that they would not know had they not come here themselves, you know, for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's two sides to this border, hence the wall between us. Sarah, who's a budding attorney from New York, she sees it as a heaven. And Benito, he's a photojournalist and from Mexico, he sees it as a hell. And he's fleeing the Mexican drug cartel. I mean, just throw that in and already you've got a movie in the making, I think. But destiny, and I love that word. I've always loved that word. I also love the word synchronicity. Destiny brings the two together in the Mexico-Arizona borderlines of the Sonoran Desert. Can you share a little bit about how that happened? How did those two people come together?
Well, Sarah was relocated to Arizona to open up the law office in Arizona from New York. And she one day went to the farmer's market, and she had never known anybody personally Mexican before. And she met a guy at the farmer's market that she loved the minute she saw him. And one thing led to another. She thought she was head over heels in love, but there was a lot of cultural differences between them that both of them had to break the walls down mm-hmm. and accept from mm-hmm. one another.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some surprises that could have been the end of the relationship, but the relationship got through the surprises. And there were many, many other kinds of walls in the book. There are other couples in the book. There's a Mexican woman and a veteran vigilante rancher, white, and the dynamics. There's a very different dynamics between a Mexican man and a Mexican woman.
Yeah.
So it's the dynamics between her and him and her ability to forgive a heinous thing that he did to her and her family. I went without giving it away.
I know.
And then there's a Jewish, retired Jewish professor in there that kind of just brings in some, oh, climate change things. He's in, he's teaching some of the Mexican people south of the border important things to know. So he brings in climate change and human civilization and culture and how we're all different and yet we're all the same. He brings in a lot of lessons.
Yeah.
So, not to mention the sex trafficking parts. There's a lot in there.
And unfortunately, there needs to be, because of what's going on in the world and what's going on down there as well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have to ask you, have you ever found it to be dangerous to live down there?
I have not. I did a lot of research before I moved down here. I was 4 hours north until a few years ago, and I was ready for a change, and I explored this area, and I went to bulletin boards and Facebook pages where people were afraid to come down here. And the worst things I found in there were maybe a Mexican or a group of Mexicans would knock on the door and ask for water, a gallon of water, or maybe a new pair of shoes or a blanket. And that's that was the extent of it. However, now that I know what I know here, there is a lot of activity at the border in terms of drugs and smuggling people in, not necessarily for trafficking purposes, but just to get them into the States illegally. And I remember one day I was down at Safeway, the grocery store in Nogales, which is the border town on this side. And I left there, every time I go there, I leave with a smile on my face because people are so nice. It is such a lovely, lovely community. And I have hospice folks down there, too, so I know firsthand what it feels like to be part of a family because they make me part of their families. But this particular day, I was leaving the grocery store, walking to my car, and with my smile on my face, realizing that the night before, they had the biggest drug bust of meth in the history of the border, anywhere on the border. Wow. And it was four blocks away from the Safeway grocery store, so It's a place of dichotomies, and I live about a mile from the border checkpoint. It's about 20 miles north of the border, and and I hear all kinds of stories about how they planted drugs in the governor's car, or the lady comes through and has drugs planted in the bun in her hair, or just trunks full of, the dogs are there and they're finding trunks full of things and things hidden in cars and trucks in places you'd never know were hiding places.
Do you see the need for a physical wall that some in government here in the States have been talking about? I mean, would that really actually stop anything?
No, I personally don't agree with it.
Yeah,
no,
I don't either.
I think that but the sure, walls, why? There are different kinds of walls we need to get rid of.
Such as
Beliefs about what the people are like south of the border. I often think if I wrote a sci-fi version of my book, at the end of the book, we would all be, all the Americans would be fleeing to the equator where supposedly it would be safest when the world comes to an end, and we wouldn't be able to get over our own wall.
You know, if we don't take care of climate change, that could be a reality one day, unfortunately.
Yeah,
you've already talked about giving a synopsis a little bit about this book, a couple of things, and both have to do with love, various forms of love. Sarah knew pretty quickly, I think maybe you even said instantly when she saw Benito, there was something there. What have you learned and what are you still learning about that dynamic, about that soul recognition?
I think that I know when I looked in his eyes, and I remember it like it was yesterday, that I knew him. I knew those eyes. I knew him, and I loved him. And I was kind of blown away by it in the moment. But as we went forward and developed the relationship, I realized that it's not just all about love and romance, but it's about what you have to learn from someone. Mm-hmm. And I think the soulmates have a love that prevails, true soulmates.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier, and it gives the incentive to work on the tests that are thrown your way. And I had some huge tests thrown my way, and I know he did too, because he had the same reaction to me that I had to him. So, yeah, I think I did write something towards the end of our relationship that said, I always thought that soulmates were meant to be forever, but soulmates are just meant to be.
Yeah, I saw that at the end of the... I thought that was beautiful, actually. Because a lot of people talk about soulmates or twin flames, or a lot of books about it, a lot of posts on Facebook about it, and I think a lot of people get confused about that, and then they wonder, you know, you can get cynical over the years, right?
Sure.
If certain relationships don't work out. But at the same time, there is something to that. But how you just described it, though, that was... What a deep lesson to learn.
Well, I think some people live their whole lives and they never experience that recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced it twice in my life. And it's the two that I experienced that with have been my biggest teachers and have transformed me the greatest, more than everybody else all put together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been painful. Growth is painful.
It is painful, and sometimes it shuts people down from wanting to try again. Or, as I said earlier, they get a little bit jaded or cynical about it, and maybe they're shooting down something that could actually be beautiful for them. So I think it's, which brings up also another thing about everyone doing their deep work and being committed to that, and only you can do that. So you can learn from those, as painful as it is. I heard someone say, I think it was Kenny Loggins years ago. He came to Indianapolis, actually, and I met him at a Borders bookstore. That dates it, too. He had a book come out. But I think he was the one, probably not the only one, that said relationship is the new spirituality. Because it's only in a deep love relationship that stuff will come up, guaranteed. And it comes up for us to take a look at, to step back, take a look at, and if you're in a healthy relationship, both people kind of being a mirror for the other and examining that and seeing what can I learn from that to heal so more of my light can shine. And I just thought years ago that was so profound when he shared that.
That sure was.
It sounds like that's what you were learning too in this relationship.
Yeah, and that's why the walls isn't all just about a steel border wall, but it's the walls of insecurity, defensiveness, ego, false beliefs, all those things are challenged.
Yeah.
And if you can work through it with grace, you can still be talking to each other even when you know it's not gonna work anymore.
Absolutely. And did Benito go through the same process?
He did. He went through it a little slower than I did.
As most guys do.
God bless him. Yeah.
And do you have any contact with him anymore?
Once in a great while by email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sends me email messages in the form of poems. Mm-hmm. He always wrote poetry, as I did.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot in common that way. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it took him a long time. It took him years to get over being over, but then one day he came around and said, you know, I know now looking back that I loved you and you loved me. And yeah, so it all has a happy ending when all is said and done.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to revisit something, though, that you said, and see if you can share a little bit more without giving too much of the book away, because I highly recommend this book. I highly recommend all your books because you are a gifted writer. I probably say that too much in the course of an interview, but I've had so many authors on this program in the 18 years I've done this, and your style is almost poetic. Like I shared before, when I was trying to audio record one of your books, it brought tears to my eyes. I'd have to stop and start over again because it tugs on your heart as this one does, even though it's a different kind of book for you. And but you mentioned about a hopeless Vietnam veteran, who's a vigilante actually. But the power of unconditional love softened his heart. And what got me was what we're dealing with today in America. We, as a student of the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln growing up in Springfield, Illinois, I almost see a replay of a Civil War breaking out again in our country.
Yeah.
And where there's two sides. And courtesy of Facebook, I have been shocked by various people and the sides that they're on, because I never would have guessed that. But because of hateful rhetoric from a lot of people being shared, it's stirring the pot a little bit, and people's hearts get hardened. And I can almost imagine, when I was reading about that, about this Vietnam vet and how hard his heart was. And the word you used to describe him, he was a vigilante, and yet it was love that tore down a wall in his heart.
Yeah.
And I've seen that happen. It's not only happened in my life, especially many years ago, but I've seen it happen in the lives of so many other guys, like big brawny guys. And I would see them on their knees wailing like babies once something hit their heart so hard. It wasn't an intellectual argument. It was something heartfelt, and it helped them change, literally change their lives. And so if you could share a little bit about how that plays out, and then we can try to bring it in to what we can learn today, what's going on in the world.
Well, yes, he was not only a veteran, but he had been married, and his wife died young and left him with a son that he didn't know how to take care of. So it was already... when he was young, it was extremely complicated, aside from his post-traumatic stress. And through the book, he actually kills a couple of Mexicans on his property. They came to his faucet at his barn to get water, and he just had perfect aim, and he killed the two of them. And it's a long story.
Yeah,
we won't go into the rest of it, but he was struggling with the loss of his wife, so therefore not... he had abandonment issues. He had post-traumatic stress. He lived alone in a... he had also been in upstate New York before moving to Arizona as a rancher, where... and some years ago, there was an ice storm that crossed the entire state, and New York is a huge dairy state.
Yeah.
And most of the dairy cattle who were hooked up to machines died waiting to be milked because the machines couldn't be run because of the ice storm and the electricity power going off. So anyway, he lost all of his cattle, all his dairy cows in New York, and he had to get out of there. So he was running and fleeing, and he fled to Arizona, which to a ranch that his father had left to the family. And he proceeded to isolate himself and drink and smoke and go up to the local diner and be miserable. And he had an old dog, and his old dog was the one he would talk to, and he was very loving with his old dog. So love was not lost, because he at least had his dog. And had to bring that in, you know, Richard.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then a woman shows up at his door one day, and she's looking for work, and he's very cynical, but he knows that he needs help around the house and in the fields. And he brings her in. She's a Mexican and a very devout, religious, kind, graceful, appreciative woman. And she's there at his side, giving him whatever he wants. And he doesn't want anything but her to fix the house and take care of the horses. And yeah, so
that's beautiful.
They reach an agreement. That's what I'll say, because I'll have a spoiler alert here.
What is a lesson in there that we can learn, that we can all bring into our own lives?
Stay hopeful with a hopeless person.
Well said. Be hopeful with a hopeless person.
Yeah, we're all human. We've all got the need for love, even when we try to convince other people we don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ones that try the hardest to show they don't need it need the most.
Yeah, isn't it true? I found that if it, through some way, if there's a way of people letting down their guard, opening up their heart, pick a phrase, and you might be polar opposites on views, but if you can take the time to do that, all of a sudden you start seeing that individual in a whole different light, and they start seeing you in a whole different light. Sure. And I've often wondered, especially today, why don't we do more of that? We're just hiding behind hateful rhetoric on both sides, you know? And we're not taking the time to have real deep conversation, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and we're not bringing each other to our knees, as you were saying before. She literally brings him to his knees in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And that's the breakthrough. You know, people aren't willing to go that far, and they give up too soon. And it's all about them, you know. But this woman, it was all about him for her.
Yeah, and that was the difference.
Yeah, but for most people, it's all about them.
Yeah, you write, it's on your website actually regarding this book. You say, every day since I've been writing this book, I grieve for people I never met, people I never knew. They will sell everything short of their soul to make the crossing, and a few will sell their soul. And I thought, that's a very profound statement, because that's very accurate. And oftentimes we want everything black and white. Either people are all good or they're all bad.
That's right.
Or they're all, you know, sacrificing and everything, or they're just trying to get something. And we lump everybody together in groups, which I find it's so challenging, the labels that we come up with.
Yeah, even the coyote, and I don't refer to the animal here, I refer to the guy you pay to get you across the border.
Yeah.
There's a coyote that was helping people cross the border, but he was leading them into the sex trafficking ring. And we follow his story. When Benito was young, he had a friend named Raphael. And Raphael was a really good kid, but his dad was involved in the cartel, and one thing led to another. And then he became involved in the cartel, and it was one thing after another. But he was a really good kid. And, you know, people can go bad, but they're not all bad. He's still a good kid in there.
Yes, I wonder how we can slow ourselves down enough to really talk to one another.
Yeah.
And try to understand one another.
Getting worse.
It is getting worse. I remember, I won't share the name, and I might get it inaccurate anyway, but there was a pretty well-known Republican politician, of course, totally against gay rights and such, until his daughter came out gay. And it changed everything, because it affected him.
Yeah.
And
ouch.
A lot of people are not believing that COVID even exists. Tragically, though, right. If they have a family member who dies of COVID, guess what? It becomes real.
That's right.
Somehow, we've got to get more personal, I think, with one another. And maybe it just starts in small ways, like with you and with me and with Kylan, who's engineering the show. And we just start taking more opportunity to be kinder, to speak less, listen more, ask questions, draw people out. Because underneath, as you said, that anger is an immense amount of fear and insecurity.
That's right. We talked about that on your previous show. On our previous show, we were talking about the anger stage with grief and how angry so many people are that our country is not what it used to be, and it's a loss of a way of being. Remember? That was very profound.
Yeah, so let's talk more about that. There'll be people listening now who didn't listen to the first show. And I would love to get your take on that, because you are a very well-known grief expert with your body of work that you've done over the years. And there is a dying of sort. I remember someone saying that everyone is grieving. You know, if you walk into a store, everyone is grieving. It's the loss of a relationship, loss of self-esteem, loss of an argument, the death of somebody. And the way he worded that, I thought, wow, Hadn't thought about it that way. That is so true. Everybody is grieving to some degree. Well, now a lot of people are grieving the way the country used to be, and I fault them over there, and the others are grieving because they're seeing the protests, but now it's getting violent, and others are grieving because, well, what's even democracy anyway? I mean, there's a lot of grief in this country, let alone the fact that we now have over 200,000 people dead in this country because of a disease that we still don't have a vaccine for.
That's right. And people are grieving, and there's so many grieving and angry that nobody's getting what they need. So it's just propelling itself further.
Yeah. So if you were able to sit down with someone, doesn't matter who, but they were going through some grief, what are some things that you would share with them to help them go through that grief journey in a more healthy way?
Are you talking about grief of our country?
It can be country. It can be my friend who I thought was on my side. You know, again, that's kind of related to our country primarily. But it does seem like things are getting uglier. So let's say for our country, and that's the grief we're going through. What are some things, if you were invited in as a social worker, as a grief counselor, to help them identify more what they're dealing with?
Well, I'd want time to do something really profound, so I can't do that today. But
what
I
is
think
that though? What would you do?
Find some way to help them feel, to help them process, to help them reach a higher place, just by whatever I say.
Yeah.
But I think number one is validating how they feel, that there's they feel that way for a reason, and that you understand. I mean, that's always the number one thing, is I understand how you feel. And I don't know. That's a hard one, actually.
Have you had family members or friends that are polar opposite of you on various views and beliefs?
Oh my gosh, my own family.
Your own family.
Polar opposite. Yeah. I went out to New York in March. My mom was having surgery, and the pandemic was just beginning, and she asked me to come home, and I went. I said, Mom, I love you enough, I'm going to risk coming home, and she called me a hypochondriac. And then when I got there, most of the people there, most of them were believing it was a hoax, and I never realized that about my own family till I went. I think a lot of truth is coming out through this. You're finding out how people really do feel about things and how limited they are in how they feel about things.
Yeah.
Because I was aghast when I went home and saw the reality of my family.
Yeah, a lot of people are experiencing that. And the other problem that we're having now is that everyone's even questioning what truth is.
Yeah, what's the truth?
Yeah, or where to get the truth.
Republicans, it's the Democrats.
Yeah, and so, and if you don't know even where to go where the truth is, that just seems to foster the divide, and people are pulling apart more and more and more.
That's really true. Yeah, where do we go?
Right, exactly.
How do you answer that? Where do I go? There's no answer.
And maybe it starts with what you were sharing. It starts, because I've been thinking about this lately, as a matter of fact, earlier, because of something that was said by our current president. And it's like, well, maybe it just starts with me, one-on-one with friends, one-on-one with family, just, you know, asking and wanting to hear, as you say, validate, but also just being kinder, more generous everywhere I go, shining that light, sharing that love that we can all do, and being more aware of that, more consciously aware of that, because, you know, as you well know, hospice schedules can get pretty crazy. And you're traveling everywhere, seeing patient after patient, and so if you're not careful, then that can create a little bit of a chaos within our souls and our heads too, because we're busy in traffic and everything else. And so maybe it's a stepping back and taking a little bit more time.
Yeah, and I had a patient I saw earlier last week, and he's 99 years old, and he's brilliant and bright still at 99. and he had the news on, and I made some comment about the news and asked him if he was going to be voting, and he said yes, and then he told me who he was voting for, and I thought, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut now. It was probably an opportunity, but I didn't want to give him a heart attack or something.
Yes, and that's also being a wise hospice worker, too. We've all been in those situations.
Yeah, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. I wish more people would live by that rule, because there's a lot of very unpleasant things being spoken to people.
Well, you mentioned a hospice patient. I keep going back to that, about what death can teach us about living, what the dying can teach us about living. And I'm wondering if that might play into all of this. I've read a lot of articles about that, actually, how awareness of death plays into even social justice issues. And there's actually some think tanks doing some research on that as well, because I remember officiating a funeral not that long ago. And in you know, small talk, I could tell that family was split. You know, half the family was, let's say, liberal. Half the family was ultra-conservative. But you know what? During that funeral and after, at the graveside, you couldn't tell. Because all their hearts were one around this precious individual who passed on, who they all loved. And they all had that in common. And I thought, you know, for these few hours, there's peace in this family.
That's right.
And death can do that, because then it puts everything in its proper perspective, doesn't it? It's like, wow, yeah, issues are important, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, I could die today, or you could die today.
Right.
And then what does it matter?
It's finding common ground, and there it is. Death is common ground.
Common ground.
Yeah.
Because getting back to the title of your book, The Walls Between Us, well, there was a wall there.
Yeah.
And the common ground was the loss of a loved one, and it brought that wall down. If we could only learn how to not only do more of that, but to sustain that, then we might be onto something.
Yeah, and I notice in the news, I'm not watching the news like I used to, because it's just so upsetting, but you'll find some of the newscasters at the end of their program will put some good news today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always something that's taking down the walls of in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we need that, don't we?
We need that. I wonder how many people turn the channel when it hits the good news.
I hope not many, but they might, because I think people, it's like an accident. People slow down and they have this macabre way of wanting to stare at the accident. Or at a racetrack like the Indy 500, people are always kind of secretly hoping for a wreck or a crash or something.
You're right. Yeah.
But I want to ask you also, how many books now have you written, including The Walls Between Us?
This is number 9.
Number 9. And based on people who are requesting it, is there like a favorite book from you that people tend to want to order?
I think the first book that I wrote in the Jack series, the one that brought tears to your eyes,
Reflections,
as you were reading it, I think that's probably the favorite book of most, but the book that has sold the most is Only Gone From Your Sight for Pets, Pet Loss Guide to Grief.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's over and above all of them.
Are the principles for dealing with the loss of a pet the same as principles for dealing with the loss of a human being, a loved one?
I think so. I think the only difference is that love is more unconditional to and from a pet than it is to and from a person most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the nature of the people who are really grieving enough to read a book are, a lot of them are very old, or they're young and disabled, or old and disabled, or retired and not knowing what to do with themselves, and their pet has a bigger piece of the pie, if you know what I mean, the life pie, than the average pet would be. Yeah,
I found that to be true as well, because our pets have a way of loving us unconditionally, and we humans aren't always so great at that. and they're always there, right, when you come home and all of that. And so I find that in my own life, but also in the lives of other friends of mine who've lost their animal companions, sometimes that's the hardest grief of all to get through.
It is. Yep. That's why my books are doing well, I guess, in my group. But, and that's why The Vigilante got softened.
Yeah.
By that kind of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It always does come down to love, doesn't it? Maybe we all need to revisit that. What does that really mean? Especially even a fierce kind of love to help us deal with one of the biggest walls I think we have in this country. You know, call it racism, call it what you want, but it's there. And it seems to be getting worse.
Yeah.
As I've noticed that both political parties are going farther and farther left and farther right. And I sometimes wonder, I look at my life and I say, well, God, what is mine to do? And I think about my kids and my grandkids. What kind of world are they going to have? And all you can do is just really listen, you know, just listen, try to get a download and take it one day at a time. And
give up.
Yeah. One of the themes out of this book, though, again, The Walls Between Us, a borderline love story, which I want to recommend to all of you who are listening to this interview right now, is destiny. I love the word destiny. What are you learning about destiny, finding your destiny? What does that mean for you?
It means quieting down, because when you're quiet, you're actually given... You have an idea to go do something you wouldn't have normally done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened that day at the farmer's market. It's like, I think I'm just going to go over here. And it was not planned.
Yeah.
But I think when you can be quiet enough to, quote, hear, mm-hmm. end quote, where you need to be, what time you need to go, I think it's part of the divine plan. But so many of us are fighting against it, thinking we have our own agendas and our own ways of doing things, and we're too busy to be quiet. And I think destiny is even becoming a commodity.
Ah, how so?
That people aren't paying attention, so they're not living their destinies.
Yeah.
They're trying to find joy in the wrong places. They're trying to find satisfaction and trying to create it for themselves when it's just waiting for them if they just pay attention to the flow of life.
Yeah. It's like the old country song, looking for love in all the wrong places.
Exactly.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Don Miguel Ruiz's book, though, The Four Agreements, how we're not searching our destiny because we made unconscious agreements along the way that I was to be a whatever, and that could have just been a projection of a parent or a well-meaning guidance counselor. And then you wake up one day and say, why am I doing this? Why am I living here? Instead of just listening to our soul, our heart.
That's right. Yeah, and when you talk about everybody going further left and further right, it's effect, we're going further away from that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you see your writing going? What's the next book going to be about? Are you working on one?
Yes, I am. I'm going back to Jack for a little while because I have so many of his fans that are waiting for more Jack. So over the years, I've gathered a lot of, I would call them Dear Abby letters, only they're Dear Jack letters from people
really?
Looking for answers from Jack about the afterlife or about loss or about life, love. And so I have... I'd like to show you a picture of the stack of paper that's in front of me, but it's about 8 inches high, and it's all the letters printed out, Dear Jack, with all of his answers. So I'm trying to put them in a semblance of organization so that people can read and understand from Jack's point of view directly
that,
his answers.
That would be a great book, actually. I'm so glad you're doing that. And I think books like that are fun to read, too, the question and answer thing. It's almost like Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now.
Kind of.
Yeah. What does Jack say about afterlife, by the way?
Well, he says that heaven isn't up in the clouds, up in the sky, because a lot of people, I have a friend who's the father died, and the grandson says, "Where's Papa?" Mm-hmm. "He's up in the sky, up in heaven." "Where's heaven?" "It's up in the clouds." Jack says, "Heaven isn't up somewhere. It's all around us. It's in a etheric, invisible world that lives in tandem with the rest of us."
Mm-hmm.
And Jack believes in reincarnation, and not like if you're a rat on Earth, you're going to come back as a four-legged rat or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But you have an opportunity to come back and learn more if you're ready to do that, and you need to do that. Come back and learn what you didn't learn the last time.
Well, I'm looking forward to that book. I've enjoyed the other books you've written, too, and clearly your fans have as well. But this one, I love how you stepped out and you're weaving a lot of beautiful stories together. And it needs to be read. I think it puts a face, it puts some humanity on the immigration issue. Maybe that's what's missing. We don't have humanity in the conversations. It's statistics and, you know, a lot of misperceptions. But you have that in this, and it is a well-written book, and I really encourage our listeners to get a copy. The book is The Walls Between Us, A Borderline Love Story, and where can they go to order a copy, Kate?
They can get it through their bookseller. You can always order for them, but it's definitely available on Amazon in paperback and on Kindle, and it's on sale until the 30th of the month for $1.99 in honor of National Hispanic Heritage Month.
Oh, wonderful.
And so they can get it on Amazon easily. And
how can they get a hold of you? How can they get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me through my website at katemaghan.com, MCGAHAN.com.
And do you do online counseling?
I do. Yep. They can reach out to me at my email address at katemaghanmsw, as in Master of Social Work, at gmail.com.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, I'm so glad that you took the time to be on the program again today, and I'm just so excited for you. I love what you're doing with your books, and I think they're making a huge difference in the lives of people. This one will as well, this new one, The Walls Between Us, A Borderline Love Story. And we'll have you back again to talk about the next one coming out.
Well, thank you for your kind words, and it's been a privilege to be here, Richard.
Once again, Kate's website is Kate McGann, KATEMCGAHAN.com. And oftentimes, I always go to the back of the book, and I'd like to do that on this book, Kate's new book, The Walls Between Us. And she writes this: "Sometimes with soulmates, the person is right, but the timing just isn't right. You cannot force an autumn flower to bloom in the spring. Soulmates come together when they're destined to come together, like Maria and David. Then again, some soulmates aren't meant to last. They're simply meant to be. It was hard for her to know which it was. She didn't know whether to put her life on hold and wait for time to pass until they could be together, or to move on with her life. The fact is, when two are meant to be together, the universe will conspire to eventually bring them together. Only time would give her the ultimate answer." She responded with words of her own that she would never send. And she writes this: "He is my Arizona. The sun rises, the sun sets, the beginnings, the endings, the clouds and deep blues, like a watercolor creamsicle that turns scarlet, magenta, or plum, are all of these colors at once. You think the pastel sky cannot get any more beautiful? Well, turn your back, then look again. Persimmon, cranberry, eggplant, orange, so beautiful you cannot look away for being under its spell, and nothing you can do will make it stay. Like a trickster, the sky keeps shifting and transforming into something else. As if in a trance, you watch it saying, 'Stay, please stay a little longer, don't go.' as it ebbs into the cinnamon, warm, gray charcoal that fades and disappears into the darkness of night. Like a man I once knew and loved, who never stayed long, always just out of reach, like that unique, one-of-a-kind sunset that ebbs away, sepia gray to nothing. But I believe in destiny, and that it will bring all the answers, like the light of a new day brings everything into view. Destiny will show me the way. Every day, I'm one day closer to the first day of my forever. Beautiful words from Kate McGahan from her latest book, The Walls Between Us, A Borderline Love Story. And again, her website is katemcgahan.com. And that's today's program. And thank you so much for joining me and get the word out about what we're doing here. For engineer Kylan Talley and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Journey's Fire. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.